Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast final episode.
Yep, I finally got sick of your shit, Jacob. We're going explicit on the last episode.
Pretty sure that's the fastest you've ever done it.
this is the final episode of the True Blue LA podcast. I'm pretty certain it's the final episode of the True Blue LA podcast. This was not our choice. SB Nation, about a month ago, made the call to no longer support a number of podcasts across the network, including ours. I am still going to be writing for the site, so that's not changing or anything like that. But in terms of the podcast, either our weekly edition or the occasional daily edition that we started up last year, that will be no more. So this is a little bit bittersweet, but we're going to go through some of our favorite moments throughout the over 10 years that we've done the podcast. It's been 10 years and a little over a month since we first started. And that's what we're going to do today. So it's going to be a little bit of a different episode. We will have questions from Craig live and a little more after this.
Wait, what do you mean it's the last episode?
So it's the last episode of the True Blue LA podcast. You and I will continue podcasting about the Dodgers in some fashion.
Why have I not been informed of this?
Yeah, I'm bringing you along that lifetime contract you signed back in 2013. It's unfortunate, but business is business. We're going to have some podcasts in some form. It will probably be set up reasonably soon. It'll be under a new name. Once it's all like finalized and once we have information, we will obviously share that with you. But we just don't have that yet. So as of now, we're still under the True Blue LA umbrella. And that's what we're going to do today. And with us to help celebrate the last episode is are two people who have been with us for a large portion of our podcast. First, we mentioned we're going to have live questions from Craig today because that Craig Manami is with us today. Craig, how are you doing?
Great. Great. And thanks for having me on, Eric and Jacob. And good to have meet Brian, too.
Thanks for all the questions over the years.
Spoiler alert.
And then our also with us is our producer, and occasional guest, Brian Salvatore. You may remember him last from the Weird Al episode in late December, which was one of our favorite episodes ever of the podcast. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me on. It has been a true pleasure to be an honorary True Blue LA-er for the past couple of years. And so I love hanging out with you guys and talking baseball and having hijinks ensue. And so I'm figuring we'll be doing both those tonight, both baseball and hijinks.
Absolutely. A couple weeks ago, I was looking through. We've been hosted at so many different places. It's hard to sort of track down every single episode. We're in the hundreds for sure. I don't know how many hundreds exactly, but we were on Libsyn for a while. We were Blog Talk Radio.
And then Then Libsyn again.
Yeah,
and then True Blue LA.
We were just talking before we started recording today. When we used to record via Skype, I know I've recorded personally from various hotel rooms / bedrooms of a place I was staying at during spring training.
I'm pretty sure the worst episode we ever did, you were at a Starbucks.
No,
and it was just so egregiously loud.
Okay. No, I don't think I may have been in the parking lot of a Starbucks, which was
maybe that might have been it.
Yeah, there was a Starbucks, the Starbucks closest to Camelback Ranch in Phoenix. they had weird hours. Well, I guess that's not weird because whatever, but like they used to close at like 8 p.m. So sometimes I used to have to finish my editing shift at SB Nation back in the day when I was at spring training. And so I would be in the parking lot using their internet before I like went home. And so, yeah, I did a lot of work there. And so we recorded from there a couple times, I think. But I did. We still have audio preserved from our very first episode. It was January 21st, 2013. Within the very first minute of the podcast, Jacob brought up the Matt Stairs home run, which he and I watched in person together during Game 4 of the 2008 NLCS.
I think it's so, also mortal payback for our second game we ever went to together, I think. Maybe third.
The Matt NLCS 2008, is this what you're referring to?
Yeah. It was a Game 4, right? Because Hiroki won Game 3, so we were excited to tie the game up. Things were going well. And in Game 3, they introduced the lineups for the Phillies, and including all the bench players, and they announced Matt Stairs. And I was sitting next to you, and you happened to sort of roll off your tongue, "Oh, Matt Stairs, he's pretty good. They should use him." And then a game later, and 8th inning? 7th inning? I have my score.
I want to say the 8th. I can't say I have the box score up in front of me, but I want to say it was the 8th inning.
It might have been
the 7th.
Yeah, 7th or 8th inning. And I kept score that game, and you could see it was very normal writing, and I got very excited. Andre Ethier had a good hit, and it was just, it looked like we were going to win the game. And then Matt Stairs hits this no-doubter home run, to which your only reply was, "Oh, no."
So among the topics on that first episode, I went through and took notes. Justin Sellers, if you can remember him, former infielder, he was popping wheelies on his motorcycle and was chased by cops in Yolo County, which made it even more hilarious. there was salary arbitration talk because, of course, AJ Ellis and Ronald Belisario were Super 2 players that year. There was the World Baseball Classic like there is this year. But back in 2013, we were remembering when Kenley Jensen was a catcher only 4 years earlier. And then also there was an article in the LA Times saying Hanley Ramirez, who was entering his first full season as a Dodger, that if he went to the World Baseball Classic, it would cause confusion over what position he played. And we thought that was bunk. The Dodgers were interested in trading for Scott Rolen at the time, I believe. We referenced an article by Mike Petriello at Mike Socha's Tragic Illness. He's gone on to bigger and better things since then, so that's fun. Also, we did a lot of roster talk, and we were talking about like what the Dodgers should do if they add another player, who should be like the roster casualty, and I had one name in mind.
I don't know. I think they're probably going to add. Probably going to add another player or two in the next week here.
If Rolen got traded, what would be the corresponding move in your mind, both what you want and what you think would happen?
Yeah, I mean, this is where, so as of right now, that's sort of the good question. Right now, the bench is essentially quote unquote set, but although I don't think it's set, they have five bench guys basically set in that. Jerry Harrison Jr., one, Skip Schumacher, the aforementioned grit master, fellow grit master Nick Punto, and then you have the backup catcher spot, whether it's Tim Fedorovich or one of the four guys they signed as non-roster invitees, and then Juan Uribe, who's making $7 million next year, or this year, wow, it's this year now, my God. But, you know, for me, the easy choice is obviously, you know, dump Uribe. You could actually make a reasonable argument that his upside is larger than Punto's, and if you want to do that, that's fine. But just the simple fact that he started one time in the last 66 games of the year. He had one plate appearance and played in one game off the bench in the last 34 games of the year. Like, it wasn't. It's not like we're saying this guy's worthless. It's that Don Mattingly will go out of his way to like I. They had so many opportunities last year to dump Uribe. Like in there was a point when Adam Kennedy went on the disabled list in July. They needed a corresponding roster win. It ended up being I think it was that Tony Gwynn Jr. getting designated for assignment.
That sounds right.
They're all sort of running together for me now. But the point is, like, they had shots last year to sort of dump Uribe, and they chose to not dump Uribe and rather keep not playing him. He was fully healthy those last 2 months, and then both Mattingly and Coletti at the end of the year were like, well, he was a great teammate and all this stuff. And it's like, all right, we get that. But then, you know, I did ask Coletti then, does Uribe have a spot on this team? And he just sort of like, I mean – sort of chuckled, you know, like, and
that's like, the support you want to hear.
Exactly. Like, we'll see. Ha ha. Like, but I don't know. You never know. I mean, every time I think Uribe is going to be cut or let loose, then he manages to not get cut.
So I'll say in my defense, Uribe was terrible. And one Uribe was terrible in 2011 and 2012.
Not just like, it was one of the things where we had to be the – because he was so hated in various comment sections that, you know, frequently I felt on the like, well, hey, you know, he still might be useful side of things. But I remember this part of the episode because you had finally gotten to the point of like, no, he should be cut. I think I probably agreed with you. And then, you know, lo and behold, my greatest live baseball moment ever when, you know, half a year later.
It was something wild because the end of the 2012 season, he was healthy, not on the injured list, and he started like once in the last like month and a half or something crazy. So it was like how they were like treating him was like someone who wasn't going to be around much longer. So that sort of fueled that discussion. But obviously it turned out to be a good thing, I guess, that he stayed because he had one of the greater redemption arcs in recent Dodgers history. The other thing, a few episodes after that first episode, episode 9, I was in spring training at this point. I recorded from the now no longer with us Metro Sports Bar and Grill in Phoenix. And the sports,
I thought it was still around.
I know it, I'm pretty sure it's gone, or it, unless. It's at the very least on a different name and possibly like a fourth new name or something.
I think it still might be. I'll look this up. But I do know the Dr. Pepper Burger is not with us. I knew that.
Yeah, that was a monstrosity. Yeah. I like Dr. Pepper. I love burgers.
It is still there with the Z and everything.
How is that possible? Why am I here recording and not at that sports bar right now? So, Jacob, do you remember anything else? I know you listened to it as well, that first episode.
Do you, and Craig's here, do you recall when we first started, where and when we first started talking about doing a podcast?
I do not. Do you remember?
Craig, do you remember?
I don't. I do recall that the Metro Sports Bar was one of the darkest yeah. sports bars I've been to. It was like a lounge kind of thing, and it was kind of a sit down. And I just happened to glance. Luis Cruz had maybe the greatest span of like baseball reference WAR between 2012 and 2013. His 2012 WAR was 112 for the Dodgers, and 106. Sorry, and the next year, 2013,
your OPS five. Plus. Yeah.
Yep, his OPS plus. Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah, he was a pop up machine. I remember that was crazy. The Metro Sports Bar and Grill, I believe they had like I want to say exclusively booth seating or something. And you're right, it had like speakeasy lighting. It was that sort of dark. but yeah, I don't remember.
Well, it was beer belly. I was gonna say, Craig, you could have guessed. I think I was home for Christmas because this was after I had moved to Kansas. And you said it was something you wanted to do the site. And I had mentioned that, you know, I could probably figure out how to run GarageBand and make it work. because otherwise I wouldn't have been on it. I was too busy answering trivia questions and comment sections to be bothered with doing a podcast. And yet here we are. There was a stretch, I think, like a year where we barely did it, but it's kind of kept steady other than that.
Yeah, it's been at the very least for like a while. It was like in the background and we would do it when we could and that kind of stuff. I didn't look through every single title, but one that caught my eye that I think might be my favorite title of the episode. We haven't done a lot of like super, like just, you know, fun titles or whatever that often, but this one was when the Dodgers traded for a certain shortstop in 2018. My post title and podcast title was Much Ado About Manny, which sounds stupid to say out loud, to be honest, but it's hilarious when you just look at it. But anyway, any other, Brian, I was trying to look, do you remember when you started editing us?
I couldn't tell you.
Roughly.
It has to be at least 2 or 3 years at this point, right?
I think so. It's like, I think probably like 2020 at the latest was probably when you started.
I can tell you right now, my first editing job was on June 1st, 2019.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot. Cause yep. we were, we've been pretty, good about like keeping the podcast up since then too. We've had quite a few episodes. So yeah. Brian, if you notice an uptick in our sound quality, it's because Brian makes us sound good. No.
I made us sound terrible.
No, I don't know. It's just hard. Like we've always been, actually, have we ever recorded in the same spot? I don't think so, right?
No. We got really, really close once when I was back in LA and just something fell through and it didn't happen.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we've always been in different spots. So that's been a bit of an issue. Obviously, it's gotten better. Technology has obviously gotten better in the 10 years since we've done it. So, yeah, it's been pretty good.
I will note that the Dodgers are playing at Kansas City again this year. You know, should new iteration of podcast come to light, you've got your shot.
True. They played there last year. They're going to play there again. You play everyone every year now. It's like, who knows? We'll figure it out. But
it's every other year you swap off. But just saying, barbecue awaits, my friend.
Can I take you up on that offer? I want some barbecue.
I like it.
Yeah, I always. We have a kid on the way, so we might have a guest room. I can't commit to that yet. But we do have, not in Lawrence. Lawrence has fine-ish barbecue, but Kansas City, we'll go. You can hang out, see the scenic Kauffman Stadium. It's a little cementy, but it's old. It's got that going for it.
I've been to 18 ballparks, and I have not been to Kauffman yet, so that's got to be checked off at some point.
Craig,
I'm at 15 because of the Texas Stadium swap over, and I was supposed to go to at least PNC, if not PNC, and seeing the Blue Jays cross the border, and then some disease happened in 2020 and prevented it. So,
Craig, do you remember when you first asked us questions? I could not find this, like roughly when it was.
I can't. It must have been some point when you guys were just asking for questions. I probably sent maybe one in. I don't know when it became like a thing for me to send in, like, you know, 4 or 5. And then at some point, I remember you guys kind of surprised me with the intro.
There, so that was when we first started. Yeah. We started an email address, tblapodcast@gmail.com. And we got an occasional question here and there on there, but it was I stopped promoting it after a while because we were getting a lot of spam, and like I still occasionally get spam.
And most of the questions were coming through Twitter.
Exactly. So like, yeah, we sort of ignored that part of it in terms of fan questions. And we've done a few like mailbag episodes in the last like year or so. And those are same thing, either Twitter or in the comment section on the site, but yeah. So I just the one sort of structure thing I think we still have.
since our podcast started in 2013, Jacob, I have trivia for you. In that season, 2013, who led the Dodgers in home runs?
Normally we have you cut to commercial break before my trivia, and I get time to marinate on it. Because of this reason, where I desperately don't want to create dead air, but Brian's here to edit my ums and ahs.
That is true.
So I've got that going for me, I guess. Let's see.
To be fair, shouldn't we go to commercial right now? Isn't that what we always do?
I mean, if you want,
I ask you the question, then I'll buy the time. That's what we usually do.
I don't know if you had more.
Right? Well,
maybe this was a throwback when.
Or no, if you want to still talk more, we could still do it. It doesn't matter to me. Like, what do you think?
No, I'm ready. I'm ready to think on this question and play some commercials. So we'll do that right now. Who led the Dodgers in home runs in 2013?
Would you like any hints?
Trying to like parse out how hurt a certain outfielder was. I'll start there. I'm gonna throw two guesses out, and you then I'll take a hint. How about that?
Sure.
Matt Kemp.
If your question was how hurt was Matt Kemp, very is the answer. he played in 73 games that year. The injuries started like the year before,
but still led the team.
No, he hit 6 home runs. He was very bad. It was rough in 2013.
Andre Ethier
hit 12. He was reasonably healthy. Played 142 games. He was tied for 4th on the team in home runs.
All right, I'll take a hint.
One of my hints is a certain rookie who debuted in 2013, didn't debut till June 3rd.
Yasiel Puig.
Yeah. So, but that was my hint to not guess him.
Can I guess?
If you'd like.
Is it Adrian Gonzalez?
It is. We have a ringer.
All right. I'm just gonna go home.
So
wait, I already have home.
I was gonna do so. The other like logical choice would have been Hanley Ramirez, except that he, I don't remember the order, but I believe he broke his thumb first, and then had a hamstring thing later. But he still hit 20 in like
Hanley
half
would have
season.
Been my next guess without a hint. And if Brian had not stolen my thunder, I bet Adrian Gonzalez.
Gonzalez hit 22.
My first thought was Yasiel Puig. Actually,
he had 19. They had 3 power hitters basically that year. It was Gonzalez 22 with 32 doubles. Hanley Ramirez hit 20 in half a season. Puig hit 19 in like 2/3 of a season. So,
well, Eric, do you have anything else before a certain theme song plays?
I don't think so, but I think. We might think of other things organically during this segment that might be coming.
I'm sure we will, because it's time for
Questions to Greg. We love them.
I'll bring us back from the song, but I don't need to. I'm not the reader today. This is exciting. We've done this a few times, but it's always exciting. It's always also a little nerve wracking because when you send the questions, and I have time to think of my answer. To sound like I'm able to come up with these witty retorts quicker than I normally can, but here I'm going to have to be on the spot, and we'll see how eloquent I can be. But take us away.
Great. Well, here we go. The last questions from Craig on Triple A Podcast. Given that we have Brian guesting on the first question, or normally it's a trivia question for just Eric. It's a question. This will be for Eric and Brian.
Ooh! I win by default.
The Dodgers have played the Mets 3 times in the postseason, and so here are some questions about those 3 series. First question: in the most recent series, 2015 National League Division Series, Brian Formats homered at least once in the five-game series. Can you name those players, and can you name how many each of them hit?
That was the postseason that Daniel Murphy turned into Superman. So one of them has to be Daniel Murphy. I'm going to say he homered twice in that series.
Okay.
I'm going to say that Lucas Duda homered in that series one time. These are all just random guesses. I'm just trying to think back on that roster. David Wright probably didn't homer in that series because he was already pretty banged up at that point. Let's say Michael Conforto hit one.
Okay.
And I'm gonna go with Wright. I don't think it's correct, but I have to rep the captain. So I'm gonna say that Conforto, Wright, and Duda all hit one. Murphy hit two.
I think Wright hit one off of Kershaw when he stayed in too long or something. Well, that's what I remember, but maybe not.
Okay. No, David Wright did not hit a home run that series. You have two of the four correct.
Okay.
I will tell you, Danny Murphy hit three, and Michael Conforto hit one. And so one other Met hit one, and another one hit two.
Oh man. I'm trying to think like who had. Oh, Cespedes
hit. Cespedes hit two, right? Hit
two, yeah. And then this is a total guess. Juan Uribe.
Was he on that team? No.
He was, yes.
Okay. Yeah. It wasn't him. It was Eric. It's an old friend. Can you name this player?
In 2015? Okay. I'm sort of going through the motions here. Oh God. 20. Wow. I don't
I'll say
think
his position.
So.
Yeah, if you give his position, I can get it probably.
Yeah, give Brian the position first. Okay.
Catcher in 2015.
Oof.
Travis Darno?
Yep.
Okay. Well, he's okay. An old friend now. All right, I got it. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
I was thinking backwards as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Future friend.
So, correct me if I'm wrong. Oh yeah, go ahead. Sorry. I don't want to ruin the future trivia. Sorry.
Oh, so Eric, can you name a Dodger who led the team with 9 strikeouts against the Mets?
The batter?
Yes.
Okay. Oh God. In 2015. So here's the deal. When Brian was answering, he said Michael Conforto, and my brain was thinking, how was Michael Conforto active in 2006? Because that's what my brain was thinking, but I was wrong. So 2015, 9 strikeouts. Yasmani Grandal?
No. So I'll give you 2 more guesses.
Yasiel Puig?
No.
Oh, boy. Not feeling confident about this one. So 2015, they had started... This is rough.
Can I steal if he doesn't get it?
Absolutely. Give me just one second to sort of
talk
this through. Jock.
No.
Okay, go ahead, Brian.
Is it Adrian Gonzalez?
It was Adrian Gonzalez.
Nice.
I almost did it, but I wasn't confident enough. Dang it.
Okay, question. The third question of the first question. Eric and Brian, in 2006 was their second series, and can you name their respective starting pitchers? And actually, I was going to have you do it game by game, but can you just name the 3 starters for the Dodgers and the Mets in that series?
So
go first.
Go ahead. You want to go first, or you want me to?
No, you go first.
Okay. Well, the one that you know no one tends to get is Hongchi Kuo. And 2006 also would have probably been Derek Lowe and Brad Penny?
No.
So Maddox pitched in relief in that series. Wait. Nope, too early. This is this is riveting audio. So Chad Billingsley made his debut that year, but I would bet money he did not start in that series, or probably wasn't even active. So I am stalling, and God, I don't remember who. Wait, was this the? No, it was too early. Randy Wolf was the next year. Oh yeah, I'm tapping out. I don't remember.
You did mention it, Eric.
What is it? Chad Billingsley?
No, it was Greg Maddux. He started Game 3.
What the hell? I'm mad.
Ed Bryan?
All right, so I was at Game 1. I'm pretty sure that was Tom Glavine that started Game 1. But I know Glavine started one of those games.
That's true. He started Game 2.
Okay. I'm going to guess Steve Traxel.
Yep.
And this is the one that I'm not sure of. It's either Orlando El Duque Hernandez or Oliver Perez.
It's neither of them.
Really? They both started games in the championship series, I believe. Okay, so then if it's not them, 2006, because Pedro was hurt. Pedro Martinez got hurt in September of that year and did not make a postseason start, as I recall. But I am half a whiskey in. So that is, there's a potential professional risk at play here. Does that mean it was, God, I'm going to kick myself for this. It wasn't El Duque. It wasn't Ollie. Oh. You got to give it to me. I'm out.
John Maine.
John Maine, of course.
Wait, did he start game 1?
2008 opening day starter, yes.
He started game 1 against Derek Lowe.
So I was at that game, and that's where Paul LaDuca tagged out two Dodgers at the plate.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Did that happen? I don't remember that at all.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Eric. You
could. So I was at a day job back then, and I took it was like a 10 a.m. game. So I took like an early lunch, and it morphed into a very long boozy lunch because I was drinking out through my sorrows after that. I was just stunned that they got two guys thrown out at the plate on the same play. Like, how does that possibly happen? And you have like Paul LaDuca delivering the tag, and wasn't Sean Green in right field? Like it was yes. Essentially like an old friend palooza, and like just awful. Yeah, terrible.
Can I tack on a trivia question for Brian on this? Or sure. Eric?
Yeah. Go for it.
Who was the winning pitcher in game 1?
Game 1
of this series.
I'm going to guess it was Guillermo Moda.
Oh man.
You are correct.
Yes.
That's awesome.
One of the best things the Mets did in that era was if Moda ended the inning on a strikeout, they would play Sister Christian, Moda Ring, because of Moda. And I remember at the time being like, that is very clever for a very dumb franchise. So I very much remember being in the stadium and Sister Christian blasting out of the speakers.
That's incredible. I love it.
Yeah. I was there with my dad, my father-in-law, and my now wife, but at the time, my girlfriend and her father.
Wow.
And
that cemented your relationship, I think, pretty clearly.
I actually I used the opportunity to drop off those tickets as the opportunity to ask her parents for her hand in marriage.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So
there was a lot of karma against.
There was a lot going on that day.
Well, we know how that series, we know how that postseason ended. So there wasn't that much karma for the Mets, to be fair.
Yeah.
And Eric, the last trivia question here. In 1988, championship series, two Dodger pitchers got a single hit. Can you name those pitchers? And they were both hit against the same Met.
So, I believe one was Oral Hershiser, so that would have been against Ron Darling in Game 7. That's the one I think I remember. So then I have to go back to...
I think I should stop you now, Eric.
Okay, so it's not...
Oral did not get a hit in the NLCS.
Fine. Okay, what about... let's go with the two Tims, Leary and Belcher.
It's one of them. Tim Belcher, yes, singled in Game 2.
Okay, so if it's Game 2... Oh, man. Gooden was Game 1 and 4. Game 2 was David Cone, so that means it's Game 6. Oh, God, and I think Belcher got lit up in that game, so someone had to come in. Oof. This doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but is it Brian Holton?
It is Brian Holton.
Oh, my God. All right. I pulled that one out of my ass. Yeah.
Well done, gentlemen. Yeah. Just you know, for people on the East Coast, and I don't know if it ever snows in Kansas.
It snows in Kansas.
Today in L.A., we had our first blizzard warning in over 30 years. It's all the news. So with snow in mind, does anyone have any memorable snow experiences? And perhaps you can get Eric to actually tell us about one of his favorite snow pictures, or at least one that I've seen.
Oh, yeah. You have more snow experience than I do, Jacob. Do you want to answer?
Sure. I'll start, and then, you know, Brian, maybe Brian next. Snow. It's just awful. Not a lot of happy memories. Prior to me moving, oddly enough, Brian's head in Utah, we went down what was supposed to be like a green triangle, and it was not. It was hard, and I just turned me off of snow kind of there on out. I don't mind being inside a building when it's snowing, but generally, once you've lived through a winter, the first one's cute, and then it's just ugly and sloshy and hard to clean out, and generally just not a positive thing. I say all this when my father slipped on the ice and broke his hip last week, so I'm particularly bitter on winter weather right now. So maybe I have a happy memory somewhere in there, and if so, I'll brutally interrupt Brian or Eric while they tell their stories.
So I have grown up, lived on the East Coast, or I lived for 4 years in Pittsburgh, so I have been in snowy environs my entire life. And I don't want to say I love the snow, because after 5 or 6 inches fall and I have to shovel it, I am not such a big fan of it. But I will always remember my dad used to have a tradition where every time it snowed, he would make a very specific breakfast. He'd make an egg and hole. You guys ever have one of those?
I've heard about it, but yes. I have a weird aversion to non-scrambled eggs, so I tend to avoid it.
Okay. Well, he would make it.
That's on me, though. I acknowledge my weakness.
He would make an egg and hole when it snowed, and so that was always like a happy memory of being a kid. And then when I was in high school, because I was this kind of an asshole, when I went to my senior prom, I wore a top hat and tails. And at that point, you had to buy a top hat when you had this sort of thing happen. And so I would shovel my snow in a top hat for a couple of years just because I thought it was funny. And that's kind of a happy memory.
So I'm on the other end. I have maybe been in snow like at most a handful of times in my life, like a handful of days. And one of those times was I was visiting my sister in the high desert of California, like up in the Victorville area. It was Thanksgiving weekend. And so, this had to be like early 2000s, maybe like
2004 or five or something. And we thought, hey, it'd be funny to take like a Christmas picture, but I was wearing like my Dodgers like pullover sweatshirt because it was cold and it was snowing. And I went and bought a Santa hat like at Target. So I just put the Santa hat on and I was like in their backyard, and like my sister was taking the picture, and her son, my nephew, we're like 4 years apart, so we're almost brothers basically. I did not see him. He was there. I saw him there, but I did not notice that he was behind my sister and threw a snowball right as she was taking a picture. In the so there's a shot. I will share this picture in the show notes and with you guys of it. I got absolutely pelted right in the chest, and my reaction is pretty hilarious. And I ended up using that for my Christmas card that year, so it was pretty funny. But yeah, so I've barely been in snow. I mean, I don't like weather at all, but like I still view snow fondly, like in the when it's on TV. Basically, I'm like, oh, that's neat. But I don't think I would survive if in like regular snow. So
what is the coldest you've ever been in, Brian?
So I visited a friend of mine in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Oh, this is gonna be good.
And it was -30 yeah. Fahrenheit.
-26 is mine in Rochester.
And just for context, at -40 at -40 Fahrenheit and Celsius align. So -30 Fahrenheit, wow. Yeah.
What I remember of -26 was that I had to go get food for Melissa and I, and I turned the car on, and it just made the saddest sound you've ever heard. And, like, the displays for the radio just don't work because, like, it's too cold for the liquid and to yep. turn on. And that was... Because feeling-wise, I don't know if you agree with this, Brian. For me, once it gets below, like... 20, it's kind of all the same. It's just how quickly you
it's all the same
like get hypothermia. So I had an experience a next level, which is the car doesn't really it works, but it doesn't like you anymore.
So in that -30, my friend had told me two things that I take with me with this to this day, which is that when it gets that cold, they basically put an electric blanket on the engine block at night.
Wow.
Just like to keep it so that there's some sort of heat running through the car overnight. But we were going, we were driving from Saskatoon to Regina, and they pronounce it not Regina, Regina. They call it the city that rhymes with fun. make of that what you will. And we were going to be in the car for like, it's like 2 hour drive. And it was like in the 30s the first night, like not the negative 30s, the positive 30s. So I was wearing like a sweater and then a blazer over it. And he was like, take your coat. And I was like, no, we'll be in the car. I'm fine. And he said to me, there is one gas station between these two cities. And if we break down, we're spending the night in the car. Bring your goddamn coat. And I was glad I did. We didn't break down. But, you know, by the time we drove to Regina, it was like -10.
Wow. I don't.
So I'm glad I have my coat.
I don't think fine China is that fun. But, you know, to each their own.
Yeah. Wait, what's a coat? Sorry.
Question number three.
Eric has no idea what we're talking about right now.
Did anyone here ever... sorry, this is the third question. Anyone here play Mills Bornes? It's a card game. It's based on a French 1,000-kilometer road race. And it's always like cars and hazards and... gas stations.
I played that with the aforementioned sister. We used to play that a lot at her house. So when I wasn't getting pelted by snowballs.
Given now, you know, Jacob Dar's gonna ever play card games with all the virtual. Who knows what games will be like when she starts playing them? Do you think they'll still be remain popular? Do you think people still play these types of like, you know? Card games.
Oh yeah. If anything, I think especially the sort of complicated ones are like I feel like have a resurgence. The sort of tabletop industry just with Kickstarter and all that has the ability to just hit the exact market of like how complicated do you want it to be, what the thematics do you want it to be, and if I have anything to say about it, she certainly will. But especially just you know, standard deck of card games, just the wild ones you can come up with that. I'm a big fan of all kinds of games, and I'm sure I'll find one that sticks. But I'm sure we'll also visit the couple of local game stores we have to see if there's one that is appealing to her. She has started to come up to me when she's like, it's a day she doesn't have school, and in the middle of the day just come up to me and say, watch Pokemon-y. So hopefully I can turn that into her playing Pokemon card game. I'll feed that habit. It's fine.
I used to play. I caught up with some, like, a friend of mine who I've known since kindergarten. My friend Scott, and so he has two daughters. And during the pandemic, we would play Monopoly over Zoom, and like that was pretty fun. We each set up our like boards at our respective houses and would just, you know, play on there. So that was kind of fun, and it sort of rekindled it, and to the point where we still every once in a while get together and play it. In fact, just 2 weeks ago I went over to their house and we played some Monopoly among other things. And then his daughter also introduced me to Mario Kart on the Nintendo Switch, which I had never played, and she schooled me because I had no idea what I was doing, but it was a lot of fun. So
question number four, an actual baseball question. Well, tribute this baseball. Who will be the first Dodger and Met pitcher to record either a pickoff or a balk on their third disengagement in a play experience? And maybe Eric needs to explain what I just said.
Oh God. So part of the new, I guess it goes with the pitch timer rules, or just the general speed up rules, where, you know, pitchers have 15 seconds to start their delivery with no one on, 20 seconds if there's a runner on, and batters have a similar amount of time to get ready in the box. But I think one of the delay tactics used to be you could throw over to first and reset or whatever. But now they limit that. So not only can anytime you throw over counts as a disengagement, but also anytime you step off the mound. So you're allowed two disengagements per, like, I think, base running situation. I think maybe if someone steals or advances, it resets. But if you've already tried to pick someone off twice, you can throw over a third time. But if you don't pick off the runner, it's a balk. And then if you just disengage for a third time and don't throw over, it's a balk. So, like, I think it's going to be confusing at first because, you know, pitchers maybe are going to be in the habit of doing that. I'm sure they're trying to work it out during the spring. But I was trying to think, Alex Vesia seems to be on the slow side, I think. And he tends to slow things down when runners are on. But so he's my guess as the first sort of first balk of 2023.
And I'm going to take a sort of a cop-out answer here, and I'm going to say that Senga will be the first for the Mets because he is so new to the league that even though it's a new rule, he's going to be adjusting to so many things, he's going to forget. But that's just a pure guess there.
Okay, and the final question, the fifth question. New York and Los Angeles are homes. The Great Delis. What is your go-to order if you're at the home of corned beef, pastrami, and masa ball soup? And particularly for those of us out here in that was frequently the West Side, West LA, or maybe the Valley, was Jerry's deli menu just too much? Hopefully, besides myself, someone else with the Jerry's.
So can you two confirm Jerry's deli is no more?
Yeah, I don't think it is. I think the last one was in Marina Del Rey. I think that one closed.
I've never been.
Wow.
Yeah.
They had everything and it was all fine. They had good egg creams, I think. I will default to typically something like a pastrami sandwich and fries, of which I have eaten, I believe, at what are frequently touted as the best pastrami places in the North American continent. And Laner's is the best, so
yeah.
In which case, number 19.
Eric, go ahead.
I think I default to the pastrami there in those cases. Corned beef's fine, but like I think pastrami is the way to go.
Yeah, if we're talking like Katz's Deli in New York City, which is the home of pastrami on the East Coast, a nice big pastrami on rye with a couple of pickles. And if the, I don't know if Katz has egg creams, but I'm an egg cream aficionado, and a nice vanilla egg cream with that is fantastic.
Well, it's only fitting that we conclude the final True Blue LA podcast with delicious food talk. But yeah, thank you to everyone for listening to us for over 10 years.
For 10 years.
It's been a lot of fun doing this with Jacob, and it's been a lot of fun having Craig on as often as he is, and how often he contributes has contributed to the podcast even when he's not on. And of course, Brian, for his work both behind the scenes and occasionally on mic. I just want to say thank you to everybody. Couldn't have done it without you. So that's going to be it for us. Like I said, we'll have more information on whatever new podcast we decide to do. And that will
this come. This is a goodbye and stay tuned, I guess?
Yeah, it's not goodbye forever. It's more see you on the other side type of a situation.
Can I say a few things here?
Yes, absolutely.
The show is continuing. I am making sure of that. And you shouldn't have to do anything. It should show up in the RSS feed.
I like the idea of saying
look,
no.
I have to assert my authority here, okay? Even if there wasn't a plan, I would make sure these guys keep podcasting because I enjoy their show. I told Eric this once. When I called in to a Spotify Green Room, I identified myself as a longtime listener, first-time caller, because I am the first person to hear the podcast every week. I listen to it first. And I love it. It's fantastic, and these guys do a great job. And Craig's questions every week bring me joy. And so even if there wasn't a plan, I'd have constructed some sort of plan to keep them doing the show so I can keep being the first listener. But it's going to continue. Don't worry.
What if we just send you audio privately? That'd be very bizarre. No.
Instead of a Patreon, one patron.
Yeah. So like I said, the details of everything we'll figure out, but there's going to be more of us just with a different name. And I hope you will listen to us there and with as minimal extra work, if no extra work possible.
Yeah. We've got rosters to talk about, news to fill you all in, three inning saves to recount. We'll be there.
I honestly can't believe we haven't talked yet about Michael Grove starting the Cactus League opener on Saturday. That should have led this episode, but instead it'll end it. So yeah, thanks again to everyone. Thanks to all of you here. Thanks to everyone listening for the True Blue LA podcast. That's it. And we'll talk to you again. Never.
Time soon.